Thank you for downloading the Radio Cardiff Sport Podcast. For more information about the show, go to our blog,
radiocardiffsport.blogspot.com.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat. The human drama of athletic competition.
This is the Monday Night Sports Show on 98.7 FM, Radio Cardiff.
Good evening, I'm Francis Taylor, and this is the Monday Night Sports Show. I'm here with Simon Williams on 98.7 FM in Cardiff and online at radiocardiff.org with award-winning sports discussion and debate. And coming up on the show, we review the weekend's football, including Cardiff's return to the top of the Championship, the Premier League results, and the managerial merry-go-round, which has been in full swing over this past week. England's cricketers have achieved an historic victory over India in Mumbai. We discuss Kevin Peterson and Alistair Cook's innings, plus the impact of spinner Monty Panesar. Wales suffered another defeat on Saturday, this time against the All Blacks. But should Welsh hearts be gladdened by the improved second half? Simon, everything from Sebastian Vettel's third consecutive F1 title to his Cardiff Devils update. We've got our Fantasy League Top 10 countdown and studio guest Cara Moseley from Mind in Sport. And you can get involved with the show by giving us a call on 02920 235 664. Or send us a text on 07728 758 759. Or email the studio sports@radiocardiff.org.
Across Cardiff on 98.7 FM and online at radiocardiff.org.uk. You're listening to Radio Cardiff Sport.
Only on Radio Cardiff.
So, very good evening. It's 4 minutes past seven, and welcome to the Monday Night Sports Show here on Radio Cardiff, 98.7 FM. Welcome to regular listeners and anyone else new tuning in. If you're in the car and you're stuck in traffic, don't bother moving. It's all right. Radio Cardiff's here. We'll look after you. Don't worry about it. Simon Williams, good evening.
Good evening.
It's good to see you.
Thank you.
And good sporting week.
Not so bad, thank you.
Excellent. And have you got a highlight for us? That's the burning question.
Yeah, mine's going to be Rory McIlroy winning the DP World Golf Championship in Dubai.
Another title.
Yeah, another title. His fifth of the season. Absolutely tremendous. Winning the tour, the European Tour and the American Tour. I mean, he's done absolutely brilliant this year. Definitely has cemented himself as the true world number one now. Mm. I mean, ended up he was level with Luke Donald going into the final round. Tremendous 62 from Justin Rose. And it looked like Justin was going to win. But no, being Rory McIlroy, absolutely tremendous. 5 birdies in the last 5 holes. Winning the tournament. I mean, absolutely brilliant. It'd be interesting if we do get a chance to speak to Yusuf, if he knows anything about the visits in Dubai, and that's where he's from. Just wondering if he knew anything about that, of course. So it'd be interesting to speak to him next week about that.
Definitely. I mean, it's an amazing year for McIlroy, and you know, we all think of the Ryder Cup, the race to Dubai, everything that's this just encapsulated this incredible season, and he's so young. That's the amazing thing, and he's cracked, you know, the American tour. He's a legend over here. It is quite incredible how that kid has gone from.
And he's so laid back, and he's so easy to get on with.
That's right.
A lot more easier than the likes of Tiger Woods is. With the public, really taking Rory to their hearts on both sides of the Atlantic now, and hopefully Rory's going to go on figuring better things in the next couple of years. It's going to be exciting to see how his career is going to progress.
Definitely. That's brilliant, Si. Well, highlight for me has been England's win over India in the early hours of this morning. 10-wicket win within 4 days. And really, it's the return of Kevin Peterson, a man much maligned. We will talk more about this later, but we have spoken about Peterson on, you know, on this show hundreds of times. We always seem to mention him in the same breath as Gavin Henson. But no, tremendous performance, and when he's at his best, he's just awesome. But Monty Panesar's inclusion, that was the key. How did they not get him in? I don't get it at all. Great stuff. Okay, we'll be back in a second.
Tune in to the Monday Night Sports Show with Francis, Yusuf and Simon on 98.7 FM Radio Cardiff.
So it's 7 minutes past 7 and this is the Monday Night Sports Show, and it's time to welcome our special studio guest, Cara Moseley. Good evening.
Evening, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much indeed for giving up your time to come in this evening.
No problem.
Now, you are from a fantastic local organisation, Mind in Sport. Tell us a little bit about what your organisation is all about, and then we'll ask a little bit about you as well.
Okay, well, it's basically in essence a psychological company, which you can probably gather from the name, but we focus primarily in high-performance sports, so trying to work with our elite athletes, whether they are seniors or coming through the system, and just give them a range of support. So we try and sort of prevent mental health issues, improve performance, and just generally become the sort of missing link, really, in all of the support that is already in place for our athletes.
And tell us a little bit about your background, because you do have a background in psychology. So, you know, what prompted you to get going in this area?
Well, basically, I went through a psychology degree, and then the whole area of mental health and counselling was something that really interested me. And I think as I was studying to do that and going through various placements and things like that, and obviously my own you know, sort of social backgrounds, if you like, I play for sport at, you know, a high level as well myself. Mm. And I think it just became very obvious that there are certain things that we're very, very good at in sport and well supported in, and then there are other areas, you know, such as psychology and sort of general well-being, that maybe there isn't as much support available. So I just wanted to try and do something really that would help, you know, fill that gap.
So your organisation's called Mind in Sport, and yeah. You're obviously local and based here in Cardiff. How long have you been going for now?
We're actually approaching the end of our first year, so it's been a bit of a whirlwind, but yeah, it's been a crazy year. But the end of December, we'll be coming up to the end of that first one.
Fantastic. And how's that first year been? Has it been quite an eye-opener, I'm pleased?
Massively, yeah. Huge learning curve, starting your own company. But it's been absolutely brilliant. I mean, you know, the amount of support and interest that's been sort of gathered from it has really surprised me. You know, if I'm honest, I thought it'd be a lot more difficult to get into certain clubs and you know, sort of spread this sort of work, but I think there's just such a need for it at the moment that it's just been picking up more and more each month. So yeah, obviously difficult in certain aspects, but you know, really enjoyable.
And how many of you are on the team?
It's just myself really when it comes to the actual delivery and the client support on one-to-one, but I do have other people, or two other people that help out in the background, admin type things that maybe I don't have as many skills in or don't have time for.
Great stuff. Well, you've obviously got a very good team behind you in terms of your web and Twitter presence, because that's how we found you. So there we go. Well, let's just talk a little bit then about the sort of the services you offer. Now, you focus on the mind in sport, mm-hmm. the psychological side of sport itself. So, you know, how do you get involved with individuals or teams or clubs? Give us an example of the kind of services that you offer.
Well, at the start, it's more of a sort of group workshop type base where, you know, you deliver certain topics to groups of players or coaches. Mm. And just cover some of the main areas, so whether they want it to be very sports psychology based or they want it to be more lifestyle management based, and you sort of work through that, and then you find that through doing those types of things one-to-one, you know, sort of individual athletes or coaches will actually come forward then and think, this is an area maybe I need a little bit more support in, or this is an area that could really push my performance to the next level. So it's very flexible, and it's, you know, different with one club to another, so everything's very tailored and specific to them. But you know, group workshops are really useful, really, to sort of break the ice and get in this area of, you know, being talked about.
Give us an example of you know, the content of a group workshop. And what sort of things is it? Sort of teamwork building exercises? Is it about sort of exploring your own mindset or your attitude to things? How does it sort of work? Because I'm sure for many people listening, it might sound slightly not odd, but just difficult to comprehend.
Sure.
Just simply by you know, simple definition, so to speak. Give an example.
Well, say for example, we did a workshop on pre-match nerves or anxiety, something like that.
Yeah.
Then a lot of the work, because it's in a group, you know, it's quite difficult to spend a lot of time with one person or find something that's specific to them that can help them in that situation. So we'll go through a lot of discussion, different exercises. They'll have exercises that they do individually within that group workshop, which builds their own self-awareness. So at the end of each workshop, regardless of the topic, they should go out the door thinking, actually, yeah, I understand a little bit more about how I react in certain situations, and you know, I've got some simple ways that I can perhaps draw off and try to improve it myself. So it's all about building that self-awareness. It's not necessarily like a teacher, you know, saying this is the information, and you know, it's very interactive.
Yeah, because I suppose there will be some people, I'm sure, who think that the idea of psychology in sport is really totally unnecessary, you know, and people should just get on, you know, stiff upper lip and just get on with it kind of attitude.
Yeah.
Do you find that is an attitude that's still prevalent despite the greater awareness possibly of mental health or, you know, well-being issues nowadays?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's still a massive issue, and it's surprising how many places are still a little bit more old-fashioned, if you like, in that way. And, you know, despite the amount of awareness work that's been done by various athletes as well as sort of professionals working, you do find that there are certain clubs or certain individuals that don't see the need for it. And all I can really say is, you know, if you look at how common, how prevalent mental health issues are, as a starting point, it is very, very common. And then if you think of the pressures that athletes have, how much attention they have, you know, physically and mentally, going through just being involved in sport, you know, then surely there's another area that maybe we could support them.
So tell us a little bit about the sort of sports that you're involved with at the moment then. And are they all on a fairly local level, or do you branch further outside of Cardiff?
Oh, no, it's very far afield for some of them. We work with a number of football clubs. So locally, I guess, Swansea City. Brighton is our other one, which is obviously a bit further afield, and Colchester as well. So they are high level clubs. Same with rugby, that's a bit more local. But in terms of our base, if you like, you know, we have got a range of sports, all the way from snooker players to rugby to football to private clients that have contacted us for one to ones, you know, and schools and colleges. So it really is very varied.
And all this in 1 year.
All of this in 1 year,
amazing.
Yes.
Amazing. That's extraordinary.
Been busy.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. What about the needs of sort of individual sports? I mean, obviously, for what maybe a rugby team might require from you or a football team, it'll probably be very difficult to, different rather, to an individual snooker player, etc.
Sure.
You know, how much of a sort of a variation is there?
There is a great variation. I mean, in this, you know, in this work in general, then how one person differs from another, you know, it could be massive. So it's always going to be different from one club to another. And certain clubs have their own sort of club ethos. They have certain targets that they want to have, I suppose, and things like that. And then again, within the sports, you know, the actual organisations themselves and governing bodies have certain pathways and structures in place, and you have to work in line with that. So. You know, it is very different from one place to another, but, you know, you have to just react to that and work with them to be as much in sync as possible.
What is it that you think has led to the greater awareness in sports psychology? Because it's something we hear about a lot now. I know that, you know, we talk about the cricket, don't we, on here, Si, and you know, the England cricket team, I know, are really into... analysing pretty much every detail of their lives, etc., etc. I know the rugby boys as well, that people have been talking about it. What do you think is it that's raised the profile of the mental side of things?
I think, unfortunately, it's been bad media attention. So things like alcoholism and drug use, people that have maybe lost their lives, you know, that's obviously created a lot of media attention. And sparked some sort of conversation and interest that way. But now, because it is starting to change, then you're finding that more high-profile athletes are actually starting to speak out and say, well, this is something I've battled with too. And it's almost more of a sort of safety in numbers now, where one person's done it, so the others feel it's okay to actually admit and say, yeah, you know, I've had to get some help in the past and try and help the people around them. So I think it's just, you know, it's just a general sort of trend, really, which has started from one person being brave and sort of putting their hand up.
Yeah, I suppose it's the same in sort of various, sort of in different walks of life as well, I suppose, outside of sport, isn't it? It's a similar sort of thing. I suppose high-profile cases, though, are ultimately beneficial, aren't they? Because they do help so many people to be able to, you know, be more open about issues that they've had. And so, you know, I suppose there's a great deal to be learned. You've got issues like alcoholism, you mentioned. We actually had on a few weeks ago, didn't we, Simon, talking about the relationship between alcohol and sport.
Yeah.
Is that an issue that you find that you need to deal with a lot of people as well, the alcohol side of things?
At the moment, if I'm completely honest, it's not something that I've faced that much. Purely because a lot of our work is more preventative. Then we start it with children at quite a young age that are linked in with the club. So unless it's been on a one-to-one level where someone's actually contacted me, it's not something that I've faced more that much. But it's certainly an area that I cover in the workshops, so that they know for the future that there are obviously downsides to it and areas to be aware of.
Yeah. Really interesting. Well, on Saturday, Wales lost again to the All Blacks. After that match, Rhys Priestland, the fly half, was actually interviewed by several journalists in the mix zone and was talking about how his own game has been over the last couple of weeks. He's come under a lot of pressure and a lot of criticism for missing a few kicks. He's not quite on the same form, obviously, that he was during the World Cup last year. And this is a little bit of what he had to say. And I wonder, Cara, if we could have your reaction to this. Here's Rhys Priestland.
Yeah, I was pretty down after last week, to be honest. I didn't leave the flat at all. And just thought I'd get some help there, sorted out, really. So I've started seeing the sports psychiatrist that we started seeing doing the World Cup. And, you know, he's been really good for me this week. And no, I was really looking forward to today, obviously. The result didn't go our way, but I thought we played some good stuff. And no, as a team, hopefully we can build on, especially the second half, and take it into next week, because, you know, we haven't won yet. And it's bitterly disappointing from our point of view, but the performance was just better today than the last 2 weeks. One of my issues has been just asking for help, really. And I've typically, as a character, I try and sort things out myself, and I haven't been able to do that. And you know, I've Andy McCann, who a lot of the boys have started, I've been seeing him, so I thought, you know, give him a shout, and nothing to lose, really. And, you know, a lot of it's to do with me. You know, I've been playing with sort of blinkers on and just been afraid of making mistakes, really. And you know, I feel much better this week.
Yeah, it's quite a frank sort of assessment of things from his point of view, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a few things in that I think are really important for any athlete, and certainly things that are very common that I've come up against this past year. And he mentioned it towards the end of that, the fear of failure, on making mistakes, and that this is obviously a huge area for any athlete, because perfection isn't really something that you can achieve. And if you get it once, then you've been very lucky, and you know, chances are it probably won't happen again, but you can have a very good performance. So getting an athlete to try and understand it in that way is really difficult, and how they manage mistakes, you know, particularly in high-profile games like the one on the weekend, is absolutely crucial. Because if you let something like that, you know, stay in your mind and you sort of beat yourself up over it a little bit, then you guarantee, you know, you've got a more negative approach, and you probably make a lot more than if you just, you know, kind of let it pass you by and focus on what you're about to do.
Do you think the fear of failure is more prevalent in the modern day sporting arena because of the professionalism, the financial consequences maybe of not winning a game, you know, the endorsement side of things, the negative press, the social media slaggings off that people get nowadays? Is that an aspect for you?
Yeah, it's certainly a problem. I mean, I'm not sure whether it's something maybe that's more of an issue now than say 20, 30 years ago. But it's certainly a huge factor, because we do put a lot of pressure and expectation on our, you know, our athletes. We want them to do well, and we want them to perform at a certain level, and for the media and everyone else to accept it when they maybe don't hit that. But then again, if you were to think of how the athlete feels, regardless of whether they've got all of that going on or not, you know, they also have those same demands of themselves anyway. So for them, it's very hard not to achieve a certain standard, because that's what they train all those hours in the gym for. And, you know, they, I obviously expect their bodies and their minds to allow them to do that every time they're out on the field. So I don't know whether it's more common now, or you know, or as you say, whether the media's maybe just added to a bit of that pressure for them.
Yeah, because I do wonder sometimes if that's maybe the case. There is a, does seem, you know, I mean, we try and be fairly reasonable on this show, don't we, Simon? You know, towards people, but I do think there does seem to be a, that greater pressure, and I suppose there is a much wider media now, and I mentioned social networks before, where people really can experience some pretty, you know, negative feeling towards them, and that can't, again, it cannot be good, can it?
No, and you know, I mean, you think on, you know, even in the papers, they'll have a rating for how well the players did. And like, as you say, you know, on Facebook and Twitter, things like that, then people can sort of send things their way and leave whatever comments they feel are appropriate at that point. And it's, you know, you obviously as an athlete need to block all of that off and focus on your own performance. But it's made very, very difficult when if they log into their account, suddenly they've got all these negative comments. And it takes a very, very strong person to just ignore that and carry on with what they're doing. And you know, I think anyone would be curious and want to read what it, you know, what they say.
Yeah, on your website is a quote from Tiger Woods here, and he says, "My mind is my biggest asset. I expect to win every tournament I play." And and here's a man who has experienced you know, personal issues in the last sort of 3 to 4 years, who's been pilloried by sections of the press, you know, for whatever reason. And there's no doubt, is there, that his performances and his game and his mindset have really suffered. The man who you thought was impenetrable, actually, he has come up against all that, and suddenly his performances have just, you know, plummeted.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? I mean, because I think that's probably the biggest test, because up until that point, he had so many sponsorship deals, and you know, he was seen as this absolute role model, and he was performing at the very highest level that, you know, that anyone could, and suddenly to have things like that taken away, you know, difficulties with his family and all of the attention that he's had, being followed by paparazzi, you know, all of that can't help. And you wonder who was actually left there supporting him at that point, or whether he was, you know, on his own, which a lot of athletes find themselves in that place quite often.
Because you talk about there's a sort of, I suppose, a life skills aspect to what you do.
Sure.
I suppose really that's where the sporting personalities really probably need potentially the most guidance. I mean, a lot of people moan about Premiership footballers being paid God knows what and to turn up for training for 2 hours a day, then they go off and play with their PlayStations. But they've got to be doing something during that off time, haven't they?
Yeah.
Sort of what, you know, what sort of life skills do you think sports people need to sort of develop in themselves? You know, is it about routine? What sort of things do you promote?
It's basically more about how do they manage their time. You know, when they leave the gym, leave their game, or they've got time by themselves, what are they actually going to do with that? Are they going to use it wisely and rest, you know, see friends, family, do things that they actually enjoy? Or are they maybe going to fall into more, what I would say, like negative coping? So maybe start gambling because they've got a lot more time on their hands, go and have some drinks, go out, stay up late, you know, all of those types of things that end up sort of just spiralling out if you don't look after them. So a lot of it is very, very simple, just general, you know, management of their time and how they manage it, really.
And you mentioned earlier on that you do work with colleges and some schools. So, you know, how important is it, do you think, that young people are educated in this sort of area?
I think it's crucial. I mean, there is actually a lot of research that's coming out now, which suggests that people actually do learn a lot better in educational settings when they have some form of mental skills training, because the way that they learn, the way they take in information and then apply it, and transfer to other areas. So it is an area I think that will probably grow a lot more in the next 10-15 years, But I personally find it really, really important. You know, and I've been in their shoes where you're trying to juggle a you know, full-time training program with full-time agitation, and it is very difficult. So I think it's essential that they have more support, really.
So if there are people listening to this show who, at whatever level, are experiencing sort of issues with their performance, their confidence, etc., etc., how can they get in touch with you, and what should they do?
Basically, any way they want to, whether it's to just check out on the website and contact us via there, everything, you know, they can be as anonymous as they want to. Everything is obviously completely confidential. So either just give us an email, you can tweet us or direct message us if you want to do it that way, or just give us a ring, do it the old-fashioned way. So, you know, it's entirely up to you. But just get in touch if there is something you want some support with.
So your website is www.mindinsport.com. That's correct, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Excellent. And your Twitter, it's at Mind in Sport?
That's the one.
Excellent. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for talking about that aspect of things, but we cannot let you go without talking netball.
Yes.
we're on Commonwealth Games Watch, aren't we, Si?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So just tell us a bit about your...
Okay. Well, yeah. I play for Welsh Netball and Celtic Dragons. I'm goal tackle shoot, and at the moment we're obviously in a big build up now into the lead up to Commonwealth Games. So it's all steams ahead, hard training, getting as many ranking matches as we possibly can to make sure we qualify in a safe place, safe position.
Yeah. And how's that going so far? Because you've just come back from a tour, haven't you?
Yeah, we just came back from the Trent Islands, and that was in October for a few weeks. We had three tests out there. One or three, very, very convincingly. Everyone played that came on, you know, came away with us. So it was a really good, you know, really good sort of try series for us, and we got what we needed, which was, you know, the play in the matches, we got more experience, and we got the wins. So yeah, it was a good part to build into this next season.
Great stuff. And in terms of Welsh netball within the UK, within Europe, how do you fare?
I believe we are 10th at the moment, ranked 10th, but it needs to be updated, so we're all hoping that maybe we've gone up a couple of places after the last set of matches.
Right, so every match counts, literally?
Literally every match counts. Even if you play someone below you, ranked below you, and you know, you obviously would hope that you win. Just playing is essential. You have to play a certain amount of matches each year, so you can't just make sure you're in a safe position and then, you know, stop playing everyone else in the world. So you do have to keep going and keep pushing on. So fingers crossed, yeah.
Great stuff. Well, good luck with that. How long have you been playing for Wales for?
I think this is actually going into my 7th season.
Right. Were you in the Commonwealth last time? You have to forgive my ignorance.
No. The last Commonwealth that Welsh netball went to was 2002. Oh, sorry. Melbourne.
Was that 2002, sorry?
2005 or something. Yeah. Six. Yeah. I can't remember.
Well, if Si doesn't know, no one will.
Yeah. 2010.
That's right. Yeah.
2010.
Yeah.
2010, 2006.
2006.
That'll be the one.
We didn't qualify.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Good stuff. Well, all the best with that. And, you know, we wish you all the very best and the great success for Welsh netball. And finally, of course, just a reminder to everybody about your fantastic organisation, Mind in Sport. And once again, just remind us of your website.
It's www.mindinsport.com.
That's fantastic. Cara Mosley, thank you so much for coming. It's been such a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
All the very best with not only Mind in Sport and the Welsh netball, but everything else you throw your hand into.
Thank you very much.
Great stuff. All the best.
Thank you.
Across Cardiff on 98.7 FM and online at radiocardiff.org.uk. You're listening to Radio Cardiff Sport.
Only on Radio Cardiff.
And we'll be right back after the ads. Don't go away.
Tune in to the Monday Night Sports Show with Francis, Yusuf and Simon. On 98.7 FM, Radio Cardiff.
Just 2 days before Christmas, my true love said to me, I know where there's a party where we can dance the night away. Sexy Sundays, John Lennie, Junior and Donnelly, Holy Patroon, and don't forget Thames and Paddy.
Let yourself go this Christmas. The Sexy Sundays Christmas Party at Mischief's. It's going to be the sexiest Christmas party ever. 56 James Street, Cardiff Bay. Sunday, December the 23rd. Tickets on sale now. Only £5. Available from Radio Cardiff, Mischief's, Eden 8 in Canton and Avondale stores in Grangetown. 02920 229 672. Merry Christmas, baby.
Are you afraid to answer your phone or open your post because your creditors won't leave you alone? Then why not speak to one of Helpdebt Plus's qualified advisors, either at your home or over the telephone? They'll take details of your creditors and negotiate with them to reduce your monthly outgoings into one low, affordable payment. Take control of your life again by calling Helpdebt Plus on 02920 611 935. There is no charge for discussing your requirements, and they have over 30 years' experience in helping local people just like you. Log on to the Helpdebt Plus website for further details.
Simply Niceness Promotions presents their pre-Christmas bash at the Globe, Albany Road, on Friday the 30th of November, featuring some of Radio Cardiff's finest DJs. DJ Scorpion, DJ Silver and Love and Harmony Sound System, plus a showcase of the hottest local talent, all for just £10 in advance. So dust off those glad rags and kick off the party season with a bang. Tickets are available from Radio Cardiff, Speedy at Splott Market, Mason Stores and GlobeCardiffMusic.com. That's the pre-Christmas bash at the Globe, Friday the 30th of November. Nice.
Soulful Saturday Breakfast with Jeremy Rees.
Saturday mornings, 8 till 10 on Radio Cardiff. Classic Soul. Northern Soul. Motown. And at 9:30, live in session, local artists from across South Wales. We're waking you up with Rhythm, Radio Cardiff.
Have a soulful Saturday.
Tune in to the Monday Night Sports Show with Francis, Yusuf and Simon on 98.7 FM.
So it's 7:33. Welcome back to the Monday Night Sports Show here on Radio Cardiff. And thanks once again to Cara Mosley from Mind in Sport for being our fantastic studio guest, and all the best to her organisation and to her netball career too. Go Welsh netball in the Commonwealth Games. That's what we want to see. Fantastic stuff. Well, it's been an amazing week of sport, and there's loads still to talk about on tonight's show. Simon will be back in the studio in a minute talking F1. Great performance by Sebastian Vettel, his third consecutive world F1 title. Quite an extraordinary record there from the German driver. Plus, of course, we've got the cricket to talk about. An amazing performance this morning over in Mumbai when Kevin Peterson, Alistair Cook, Monty Panesar, excuse me, and the boys brought us home for a 10-wicket win against the Indians on their home patch. Quite extraordinary stuff. But it's been an amazing week as well in the Premier League. And our Fantasy League, of course, has really taken off over this weekend. Although there weren't some of the great moves and shakers around, there's definitely been some alterations to our top 10. So here is this week's Fantasy League Top 10 Countdown. One place to number 10, Cal Farmer and Borussia Teeth on 646. Up 3-9, Gareth Mabey and the Dinosaurs on 649. And unchanged at 8, it's Kwame Bannerman with Percy Pigs on 650 points. Down one place to number 7, Alexandru Rosmarin and Arsenal on 659. Up 1-6, Matthew Eves with Larks FC on 661. And down one place to 5, it's Charlie Garner and TJ Hookers on 676. Up 1-4, Emily Klusterman and Klusters Hotspur on 678. Unchanged at 3, Aaron Moran and Victor Wanyama on 696. And it's another non-mover at 2, Andrew Birch and Rapid Renalton on 704. Which means that for the second week, our number one is Barmo with At Barton Life on 723 points. Well, Si, if we're going to talk Fantasy League, we've got to make a quick mention of Simon Williams. 20th place, Simon.
20th, is it?
It's not been your finest hour.
No,
It's not been your finest hour. But then I also have to say with some glee that the absent Mr. Hyder is down in 12th place. He's exited the top 10 this week. So,
what about yourself?
Myself? One below you, Simon.
Oh, right, okay.
3 points below you in 21st place. So there we go. It's looking fairly exciting now. It's looking fairly exciting. Great stuff. And Simon, it's time we've really got to talk about this cricket.
Yeah. Definitely.
Quite extraordinary win by England this morning. And to wrap up in 4 days on home soil, on Indian soil in Mumbai. Yeah. Quite incredible.
And especially having been outplayed in the first test in a great turnaround. As you were saying earlier, Monty Panesar, bowling absolutely brilliant. Kevin Peterson, absolutely tremendous innings by him. Great performance by the boys. Done the nation proud. Let's hope they can go on and win the series now.
Well, I mean, it would be extraordinary, really. There's two tests to play, of course, and it's beautifully poised at 1-1 now. Now, we'll come on to Peterson in a minute and a little bit more about Panesar. But we've got to make mention of the captain, Alistair Cook, here, because he's now reached 22 test centuries. He's only 27 years old. He could, if he continues at the rate that he's been producing, he could be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, English batsman ever.
Yeah, quite easily. That's right. Peterson's on 22 now, isn't he?
He certainly is, definitely.
Some really good names on the 22 mark at the moment.
It's really quite extraordinary how Cook has taken off. Of course, he made his debut in India back in 2006 or 2005, I think it was now. Some time ago. Yeah. But just an outstanding talent, isn't he, all round?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We've seen his progress from when he started out in county cricket, when his company were playing against Glamorgan and things like that. He's been a player that you've seen play for England and seen him progress as a test class batsman. Now he's taken over the captaincy from Andrew Strauss, and then he's really still playing at the top of his game. He's doing really, really well.
Quite incredible. Now, mention of Monty Panesar as well, before we talk about KP. He was much criticised a few years ago for being far too similar. Great bowler, but once people had sussed out his one delivery, that was it. No variation. But he's not that bowler anymore, is he? He's gone back. He's played for Sussex. His county game has been strong. He's back in the test squad. Anyone in Cardiff knows about Monty Panesar after what happened in the Ashes. It's great to see the guy back because he's such a character.
That's right. Yeah, he's a great character. It's great to see him being selected for England again, and he certainly didn't let anyone down. He bowled absolutely brilliantly, and he's one of the keys to our success in the second test.
Definitely. Now, Kevin Peterson, final point on the cricket tonight. He's back. It would appear that he is well and truly back in the hearts of the nation, in the hearts of his team, and in the run, Simon. What more can I say?
That's right. I certainly said, and I think you were still in two.
I was humming and ahhing. Yeah, I was harsh.
I know I blew my own trumpet, but I did say just to give him another chance, and I was pretty confident that he would come up with the goods. And this tour, and especially this second test, has shown that, as you said, the nation are behind him, his teammates are behind him, everything that happened in the South African tour looks like he's gone to bed. That's gone to rest. Everybody's behind him. He's playing some of his best cricket. Obviously, in this test, he's certainly playing some of his best cricket for England. And just hope that he can continue it for the rest of his career. He is such a great talent when he's on top of his form. And it really would have been too soon for him to finish with England, really, after the South African tour, when we played South Africa. But he's gone down to India. I know he loves it down in India because he loves playing in the...
He loves the IPL.
Yeah, that's right. He loves playing in that. He must really be enjoying himself down in India. And just hope that he can, as I said, continue his form, and the boys can win the series and bring the spoils home, and hopefully we can get back to that away. But arguably, we should be number one test playing nation in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't say anything other than I completely and utterly agree with you, Si. But I'm pleased that Kevin Peterson's come good, and I'm extra pleased as well that the team, I think, itself is probably going to benefit massively from this. And I think that's important because they haven't looked the same complete package, have they, in the last few matches, and they haven't been 100% right. Great stuff. OK, we're going to be talking F1 in 2 seconds.
Hello there, my name is Smoking Joe Frazier, sharp as a razor. You listen to the radio, 98.7. Check them out, they turn you on.
Now, this weekend saw Sebastian Vettel claim his third consecutive F1 title, and we've been following the F1 closely this season, and it's been an extraordinary title race. Went down really to a two-horse race between Sebastian Vettel and Alonso, but in the end, Vettel just had that little bit extra, and he's now being hailed as the new Schumacher, you know, following in that great German tradition. Some people saying he could even match Schumacher's record haul. So, Simon, first of all, a great achievement for Vettel.
Yeah, definitely. As we were saying, he is the youngest Formula One winner of three consecutive Grand Prix. He's joined Fangio and Michael Schumacher himself, being the three times consecutive winners. But the good part in the race, I mean, we were saying, I mean, Michael Schumacher, and everything everybody says about Michael Schumacher. But I mean, towards the end, they are such great mates. And I know they're great competitive rivals. But in Michael let Vettel go past. It was like he was really saying, right, I'm moving, I'm passing on the torch now. I mean, my era's finished. Now there's Sebastian Vettel, and those three, but his era has really started now. Michael Schumacher, when the race finished, was the first one there to congratulate him. I mean, it has been absolutely brilliant. Race, certainly the best Brazilian, and certainly one of the best races ever. Mm. With Vettel getting off to a nightmare start when he got hit by Bruno Senna's car. His car got turned around. It was fortunate none of the car smashed into it.
Yeah,
and he was able to, and he went right to the back of the pack, and he worked his way through and finished sixth. I mean, Lewis Hamilton, and we didn't have a chance to speak about Lewis last week, winning the American Grand Prix, done absolutely brilliant. I mean, he looked like after the car had come out and gone back in, that he was when he went past Hulkenberg, it looked like he was going to win the race. He was going to wait and win the race, but another car unfortunately went into him, and that was the end of Lewis's career at McLaren for the moment. Because I would not be surprised
in
a future time if he does go back. But being with the new changes that are coming in 2014, I mean, that's what it's. I think, and certainly the money and working with Ross Brawn. I mean, that's certainly and it's a fresh challenge for Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously going to be the number one. I mean, Rosberg's certainly going to be a great teammate for him, because he's been with Mercedes for quite some time. Mm. But the two of them are great mates. So I mean, it's somebody he's going to really get on with. But it was great to see Jenson Button winning the Grand Prix.
I was going to say, yes, of course,
really great. Yeah.
Because of course, Vettel was allowed past by Schumacher to get the 8 points that he required.
Yeah.
And of course, Fernando Alonso finishing second in the race. But yeah, a great win for Button, and a great way to end the season, because now he can look forward to 2013 with another victory under his belt from this year.
Yeah, and it's been great for McLaren to win the last two Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Been absolutely brilliant for McLaren to win the last two Grand Prix. Unfortunately, I mean, I was looking forward to at the end of the BBC's coverage to see, and I mean, with the Devils playing, obviously I had to leave earlier, so I mean, being the three that finished first, second and third, which was
Button, Alonso, Massa.
Yep. Obviously, they had the interviews with them.
Yeah.
But I mean, they didn't have an interview with Vettel at the end.
Yeah.
Because I would imagine if that had went to the Red Button, and the Red Button would have certainly looked after that.
Yeah.
And obviously, Sky, who had done an absolutely brilliant job with their F1. I mean, they done it. But from what I've heard, it looks like all the races are coming back to the BBC next season.
Oh, right. So, I wasn't aware
yeah,
of that.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, I think they've near enough... mainly for all the races have been on, yeah. even though it's been a couple hours later.
Yeah.
So you know, it's great that the BBC are going to still be showing the Grand Prix for the next couple of years anyway.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, it's one of those things they talk about, the, you know, the crown jewels of broadcasting, don't they, with the sports and things like that. It's very important that these, you know, great events are definitely kept... kept on terrestrial viewing. Yeah, fantastic definitely. Stuff. Brilliant, Simon. Okay, well, in a minute, we're going to be talking Cardiff City.
Hello, I'm Neville Sattel. You listen to The Sports Show on Radio Cardiff.
Okay, Barnsley 1, Cardiff 2. Simon, yes. Cracking away result. And, of course, it's Derby coming up tomorrow. Tomorrow night, isn't, I'm right in the saying, aren't I?
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking about these away fixtures before, and this is a fantastic win. Back to the top of the Championship.
Yeah, back to the top by a point now. I mean, great game from Ben. I mean, Ben Nugent. Mm. I mean, in the papers today, Malky's really singing his praises and saying that he could very well be a future Cardiff City manager. Cardiff City captain, sorry.
Yeah. Wait for it.
Yeah, very funny. So it looks, I mean, that is how... Malky certainly thinks of him, and what I've seen of him, he certainly looks a great prospect. But... And then we've got Gunnison getting a second. I mean, it was a good win against Barnsley. I mean, sadly, with Simon Lappin, our player, we've just signed on loan from Norwich, being sent off mid to the last few minutes, especially from 76th when Barnsley got their goal. I mean, pretty tight. But I mean, City were able to sit and see the game through and set them up nicely for the game against Derby tomorrow. I mean, if we can get 3 points against Derby, I mean, it'll be very interesting next Sunday with the return, of course, of Dave Jones.
Dave Jones with Sheffield Wednesday,
yeah,
of course,
right.
who are languishing down in the relegation zone at the moment.
Not very well at all.
Not very well at all. But, you know, things hopefully will pick up for them. But we were saying, weren't we last week, about the sort of reception, and I think we're very much in agreement, Yusuf in his absence and you and me, that Dave Jones should get a hero's welcome at the Cardiff City Stadium. I mean, he put in so many great years of service and came so close to promotion.
So
but, you know, FA Cup final?
Yeah, that's right.
Can't knock it, can you?
No,
you can't knock it. Absolutely. All those trips to Wembley, you can't knock it at all. Great stuff. Well, an interesting fact as well is that before beating Barnsley, Cardiff hadn't won a match while wearing blue.
Yes, that's right.
Until the other blue. Day. Brilliant. So this the new red is, it seems to be working. Nine home games on the trot now, you know.
Yeah.
Fortress Cardiff City Stadium.
Right.
And hopefully that'll continue against Dave Jones as well.
Hopefully, yeah. And that'd be great if we could beat Derby, we could beat Palace. And then hopefully the teams around us can drop a couple of points. I mean, we can open a little bit of gap at the top. Yeah. And it'd be great if City can finally get to the promised land of the Premier this season, and be interesting come January to see what money is going to be available for any reinforcement that Malky decides he needs.
Mm. Well, Si, we're going to talk about Cardiff Devils fairly shortly, and hopefully we'll get some reaction if Yusuf is able to give us a ring on the managerial changes this week. But we'll definitely be talking about that towards the end of the show. But we've got to mention the rugby quickly.
Yeah.
Final test of the autumn series coming up against Australia on Saturday afternoon, 2:30 kickoff at the Millennium Stadium. Now, the second half against the All Blacks was a much better performance, a bit more of that spirit that we've been, you know, seeing a lot of in the last couple of years. 10 points all. But the first half, New Zealand.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
I know.
Their skill, their speed.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
They're too good for anyone. They are, without doubt, the best team in the world. I mean, there's no question about that.
Mm.
But if Wales had got what Priestley was trying to do at the early stages, which they'd done in the second half, got the throw in, and all the team went in for the
13-man lineup.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was obviously the plan that he was trying to get really early on, because most people would have said, "Oh, why don't they go for the points?" Like,
yeah.
I mean, but they decided not to, and this obviously was their plan, but it backfired on them. And as you said, New Zealand were absolutely amazing first half, and it was good for second half performance by Wales and drawing 10-all, but it's as I said, being like I could see last week, I said being we're on Gatland coming back, that Wales were putting much better performance in, which is definitely did second half, and bits of the also bits of the first half.
Yeah.
So it's setting us up for a big game against Australia, very important game.
Yeah.
Because World Cup ranking points have been at stake, and apparently if Wales beat Australia, we're in the top eight.
Yeah.
If we lose, then Argentina and Samoa will be taking the seventh and eighth spots. Sure. Because at the moment, Wales are seventh in the world rankings at the moment.
Mm.
But it's just going to... Just hopefully we can do the Australians. But I mean, we've had some great games against them recently, but they've just been a little bit too good for us. But,
well, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And... You know, the Gatland factor, I think, has come back into play now. He was looking pretty despondent on the camera on the first half. But I've got to say as well, from where I was sat, that 13-man line-out, that was just the most extraordinary thing I have ever seen. I have never seen that done live.
No.
And that was just an incredible I loved it. Great stuff. Okay, we're going to be talking Premiership manager mayhem in a minute, but we're going to do a little bit of ice hockey with Simon first.
This is Mac Falcon of the Cardiff Devils. You're listening to the Monday Night Sports Show on 98.7 FM. Bang on me.
Well, I mean, the weekend's the Devils lost 5-0 away to Nottingham Panthers. Matt Myers scored 2 for Nottingham. I mean, that's about all I want to say, really. I mean, well done, Matt. But, I mean, the Devils lost 5-0. I mean, great performance by the Panthers. But the big news coming out that Mark Richardson was there and on Saturday night. And he's played for the Devils, and he's also played for Nottingham Panthers. And it looks like he'd love to get back to playing Great Britain. I mean, he's at the moment he's in Kazakhstan with Alan Kokeshatu. And
steady.
Yeah, I know. And but it all depends if they will release him for another club. I mean, it would be great because he was being without a shadow of a doubt, he was best British defenseman last season, and he's had a great time. He was absolutely brilliant last year, and he was another one of our the British team that's got getting so close to the Olympic Games. But Sunday night, the Devils versus Coventry. Devils won 5-2. It's 2 goals from Stuart McRae, 1 for Paul Bassanet, 1 from Adam Hardin, 1 from Chris Blight. Devils totally deserve to win that game. We're coming up to the doubleheader against Sheffield now, coming up in away to Sheffield on Saturday, and then really a meaningless game on Sunday against the Steelers in the Challenge Cup. We're out, so I can't really see that. Unfortunately, can't see that many Devils fans going, unless the Devils going to do a reduced price for the tickets.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be interesting. And as I said, bringing Paul Bissonnet has really been a star player. I mean, absolutely brilliant. Mm. I mean, it'd be great if we can get him for much longer. It all depends how long the strike goes. Mm. The last we heard, if he could very well last another fortnight, 3 weeks. I mean, hopefully we can get him till after Christmas.
Yeah. Longer we can hold on to him, the better.
That's it, yeah. I mean, really want to get this player playing for Devils for as long as we can, because he's such a tremendous player.
Yeah.
And I mean, certainly the Devils' form has, other than that Nottingham game, the Devils' form has certainly turned around since he's been there. I mean, he's been banging the goals in. Fair play to
him.
Yeah, it was certainly it's been great to see him play and seeing the current NHL star playing. I mean, it's been obviously being the guys who were able to guy and Sky and able to watch NHL. They're certainly, I mean, know the player. They're quite excited. Yeah, we've heard of this player. I mean, let's go and have a look. So it was a packed out arena on Sunday night. Brilliant atmosphere. Devils totally deserve to win. I mean, we beat Coventry. I mean, the only thing being end of the match. I mean, there was no, whereas we thought there was going to be a confrontation between Olsen and Bissonnette. I mean, there wasn't really. Olsen was pretty quiet, but at the end of the match, there was a bit of a fight. And Deeds with third man in, so he's been banned for a match for fighting. I mean, the Devils won. I mean, and it was a good win. Great to get revenge on Coventry for being the what happened a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely, great stuff.
Well, thanks, Si. That's brilliant. And long may the Cardiff Devils continue their success, and long may the strike go on in Canada. But good evening. America. Good evening.
Hello.
All right,
hello.
How are you doing? Okay.
Yeah, not too bad. Fallen foul of some winter badness, unfortunately.
Oh dear. Well, there's a lot of lurgies going around. But Youth, you're on the phone now. We've got to get your reaction to what's been going on with the managerial merry-go-round, because you know, some inevitable sackings, you might argue, but also some extraordinary appointments.
Yeah, if I could just jump in quickly with a sporting highlight of the week.
Oh, go for it.
It was Gomez's hat-trick for Wigan in a fantastic match that finished 3-2. And he scored the perfect hat-trick, which was left foot, right foot and a header. And Roberto Martinez signed him a long time ago. And when things weren't going well for Wigan, it looked like, you know, he looked like a bad signing. But he's had patience with him. And I think this is the second time he scored a hat-trick this season. And, you know, things are really starting to come together for Martinez, for Wigan and for Gomez. And it was a brilliant, brilliant performance.
Yeah, fair play. So should we start with Hughes being sacked then?
Yeah, I mean, it was inevitable, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the only surprise really is that how long he managed to keep his job. they had Reading versus Southampton a while ago, El Sakiko, as they labelled it, with whoever lost was going to get sacked.
Yeah.
Hughes managed to stay on for another couple of weeks, but it was a stay of execution, really.
Yeah.
Harry Redknapp played a blinder in the press, talking about how he's really interested to go and be the manager of Ukraine. He still sticks to that version of events.
I'm
not 100% certain that he would have got on with the weather, personally.
No, he wouldn't have been able to hang out of his car window and give press interviews, would he?
A two-fat bomber.
Absolutely not. And, he's the right man for the job, let's face it. I feel sorry for Hughes, but he knew what he was getting himself into.
That's
there,
right.
Really, and a lot of players brought in. The players need to take their bit of responsibility, which has been roundly agreed with by most of the people in the media. So a brilliant, brilliant appointment, Redknapp, and unfortunate but inevitable for Hughes.
Okay, now we haven't got long left, Hughes. We've got about a minute and a half. So Di Matteo fired and Benitez interim in.
Di Matteo fired. I mean, the second time really that we have had to say that it's very unfortunate circumstances that he's lost his job.
Definitely.
Again, somewhat inevitable that if he needed to win like every single match, really, didn't he? Because he was never Abramovich's first choice.
No.
Hence him being taken so long for him to be offered a contract at all. But the interesting thing of this, really, I mean, there's nothing more to say on that, really. Di Matteo's done a brilliant job. I just hope that he gets a good appointment sometime soon, because he deserves it. He's a really great guy. But the appointment of Benitez, I think, just goes further to show that fans don't own football clubs, you know? Owners own football clubs, and it is as simple as that. I mean, technically, Rafa Benitez is a fantastic appointment for Chelsea, probably the perfect appointment for Chelsea, because he'll go in, he'll sort the egos out. There's only room for one ego when Benitez is in the changing room, and
that's him.
And that's what Chelsea needs.
Yeah.
But the fans, clearly, not happy with the appointment at all.
No.
I mean, I've never seen anything like it, the sort of reception that he had.
Mm.
I mean, a player could have gone from Liverpool. Luis Garcia, who scored the phantom goal, you know, he could have gone to Chelsea, and he wouldn't have got booed like that at all.
No.
You know, so really a ridiculous appointment in that sort of sense, but a great start for Benitez, you know, and I don't think they're going to get this sort of attacking football that they had under Di Matteo, or the type that they normally expect from their players. But we'll see if Benitez can get the best out of Torres.
Well, we'll soon see. Yus, I'm sorry, we've got to cut you short. It's just coming on 8 o'clock, and we're going to Alan and Alex for the B-Side Rock Show. So thank you very much, and hopefully you'll be back in the studio next week.
I will be.
Great stuff. Good,
okay,
man.
Then.
Get
bye
well
bye.
Soon. Cheers.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Great stuff, and thank you very much to Yusuf there for calling in at the end. Simon, thank you very much indeed for your company this evening. Absolute pleasure as ever. No, never the same without Mr. Williams here. So it is 8 o'clock, as I said, and coming right up, it's Alan and Alex with the B-Side Rock Show. Plenty to keep you busy on Radio Cardiff tonight as well. DJ Callister coming on at 10, and loads and loads of the best music here all day, every day on Radio Cardiff. So from Simon and from me and from Yusuf on his sickbed, goodbye.
Thank you for downloading the Radio Cardiff Sport Podcast. For more information about the show, go to our blog,
radiocardiffsport.blogspot.com.